Frank said so long to the captain of the Montclair and went up on deck again. He was headed for the gangplank when he heard a step behind him.
Morgan?
Frank turned and saw the ship's officer called Brewster. He gave the man a curt nod.
You coming along to Alaska?
That's right.
I think we should get something straight between us then, before the voyage starts.
What's that?
This!
Frank pulled his head aside so Brewster's punch missed completely. Brewster stumbled forward. Frank grabbed Brewster's arm and sent the man crashing to the deck. The ship's officer rolled over a couple of times before he came to a stop.
You took your shot, mister. Let it go at that, and we'll call it even.
The hell we will!
Frank was vaguely aware of shouting and knew that other members of the crew were probably gathering around to watch the fight. That meant he would be heavily outnumbered if the other sailors decided to take a hand. Frank ducked under Brewster's swing and drilled a fist into Brewster's gut, doubling the officer over. Frank came in with an uppercut that drove Brewster to the deck on his back.
Damn it, stay down.
You go to hell, Morgan.
Chest heaving, he came toward Frank again. He weaved a little from side to side as he bunched his hands into fists and got ready to start swinging again. Frank didn't wait. He brought around a looping right, which landed with devastating impact on the officer's jaw. Brewster didn't move this time. He was out cold. With that threat taken care of, Frank looked around to see if any of the other members of the Montclair's crew wanted to take a hand in this game. Half a dozen roughly clad sailors and a couple of blue-uniformed officers were standing there with surprised expressions on their faces. Clearly, they hadn't expected Frank to emerge triumphant from this fracas.
Mr. Morgan, what's going on here?
That fella Brewster didn't care much for the idea of me sailing with you.
Hoffman stalked across the deck, his face set in grim lines. He looked around at the other members of the crew.
Is this true? Did Brewster attack Mr. Morgan?
No one answered him. Frank figured the men wanted to be loyal to their fellow seamen. But then one of the sailors found some courage.
Aye, that he did, Captain. The cowboy didn't do anything except defend himself.
Aye, that's the way it happened, Captain.
The other sailors nodded. Frank began to sense Brewster wasn't well-liked among the crew, at least not by the common sailors. The other officers were reluctant to speak against him, though.
I see.
Hoffman turned to Frank.
My apologies, Mr. Morgan. I'll deal with this matter. I'll tell you right now, though, I don't plan to dismiss Mr. Brewster. He's a very competent seaman, despite his touchy nature at times.
Wouldn't ask you to throw him off the ship. Just tell him to steer clear of me, and we'll get along fine.
That much I can and will do.
Frank nodded. As far as he was concerned, the ruckus was over and done with, and he was willing to leave it that way. Frank started to turn away.
And thank you for not killing him.
That would have been a hell of a way to start the trip, wouldn't it?
Since Fiona agreed with him about the advisability of stocking up on supplies here in Seattle, she had left it to Frank to make those arrangements. He went to the largest general store he could find and talked to the proprietor, laying out a list of what he needed. The man's advice came in handy. He had outfitted plenty of travelers to Alaska. The man knew what was necessary and what wasn't. Of course, this was a little different, since the young women traveling with Fiona weren't going to prospect for gold themselves. But they needed the same sort of warm, heavy clothing and easy-to-carry provisions as the gold hunters. The storekeeper raised his bushy eyebrows in surprise, though, when Frank asked for 12 .32-caliber pistols. He didn't figure the young women could handle anything heavier than that.
I thought you was taking mail-order brides to Skagway, Mr. Morgan, not putting together a small army.
So word had gotten around town about the cargo he and Fiona were delivering to Alaska, Frank thought. He wasn't surprised. News traveled fast in frontier settlements, and that's what Seattle still was.
Just because they're women doesn't mean they can't protect themselves. They're going to some rough country.
Yeah, they sure are. And I reckon it's a good idea for them to be armed. I wouldn't have thought of it myself, that's all.
I want a couple of Winchesters, too. 44-40s.
Yeah, I can do that. If you're going over Chilkoot Pass, you'd better be armed for bear, or worse.
What do you mean by that?
Just that there's things up there worse than wild animals. From what I've heard, that Yukon and Klondike country is full of two-legged varmints, too. Outlaws, claim jumpers, just purely mean hombres looking for trouble. A bunch of young women traveling together? Yeah, it's gonna be a mighty tempting target. I don't reckon I'm telling you anything you don't already know, though.
No, you're not. Captain Hoffman intends to sail by 10 o'clock.
I'll put the order together and have it delivered to the Montclair the first thing in the morning. Do I send the bill to Mrs. Devereaux at the hotel?
Send her the bill for half of it. I'll take care of the other half right now, if you'll accept a draft on my bank in San Francisco.
Well, now, I...
The draft is good.
Oh, I never doubted that, Mr. Morgan. I didn't mean no offense.
The story of Fiona's trip to Alaska with the mail-order brides wasn't the only information that had gotten around Seattle. So had the news of the two gunfights in which he had been involved the night before. The storekeeper knew that he was dealing with the notorious drifter.
I'd be glad to take your draft, Mr. Morgan. I was just a mite confused, that's all. I was under the impression you're working for Mrs. Devereaux.
I am. I just thought I'd help her out a little.
The amount was more than a little, of course. But Frank knew he would never miss the money. When his attorney, Claudius Turnbuckle, got wind of the expense, as Claudius always did, he might raise an eyebrow, but he had learned over the years that Frank usually did as he damned well pleased, and arguing about it didn't serve any purpose. The arrangements concluded, Frank left the store and headed back to the hotel. It was late in the afternoon by now. Along the way, he stopped at the livery stable and informed the proprietor there that he would be picking up Stormy, Goldie, and Wolf first thing the next morning. The man's sour expression as he nodded indicated that it couldn't be soon enough to suit him. By the time Frank got back to the hotel, people were going into the dining room for supper. He looked through the arched entrance for Fiona, but didn't see her. Turning instead to the stairs, he started up to the second floor. Fiona appeared at the landing as Frank moved to the stairs, followed by the 12 young women. Frank stopped and watched as they started to descend, talking and laughing among themselves. It was a sight to behold. True, not all of them could be considered beauties, but they were all sweet and appealing, even the somewhat prissy Gertrude. Frank was old enough to be their father, of course, so he didn't feel drawn to them himself. But he could imagine how some miner stuck in the wilds of Alaska would react to any one of them. It was no wonder that Fiona's business was successful. A man could get mighty lonely, and only the soft touch of a woman could ease the ache he felt inside. Fiona paused and smiled at him.
Is everything ready, Frank?
It will be. Our supplies will be delivered to the boat tomorrow morning in plenty of time for Captain Hoffman to sail on schedule.
That's wonderful.
She came on down the steps and linked her arm with his.
You'll join us for supper?
Well, I thought I might clean up a little.
Meg came down the steps and took his other arm.
I think you're fine just the way you are, Mr. Morgan. Don't you, girls?
Several of them smiled and nodded. Frank had no choice.
All right then. I'd be honored to join you, ladies.
Frank thought about all the solitary meals he had eaten on some lonely trail, often with men pursuing him who wanted to kill him, not knowing if he would live to see the sunrise the next morning. Now he was about to sit down to eat at a table with a snowy white cloth on it, set with fine china, surrounded by a dozen young women and a somewhat older one who was even lovelier. He regretted Jacob Trench's death, of course. But right now he was sort of glad he had come to Seattle. The next morning dawned cold and blustery, with gray clouds scudding through the sky, and occasional bursts of light rain spitting down on Puget Sound. Frank wore a sheepskin coat as he left the hotel and headed toward the livery stable to collect Stormy, Goldie, and Wolf. The horses and the big cur were glad to see him. Frank settled up with the livery man, then saddled Stormy himself and rode out of the barn, leading Goldie. Wolf trotted beside them. His ears were up and tilted forward a little as he took in all the sights, and more importantly, where he was concerned, the smells of the port settlement. Frank rode along the waterfront until he came to the wharf where the Montclair was anchored. A couple of wagons were drawn up on the docks, and crates were being unloaded from them and carried aboard. Frank spotted the storekeeper he had dealt with the day before. Obviously, the man had come along to supervise the loading of the supplies himself. He raised a hand in greeting when he saw Frank.
Morning, Mr. Morgan. Got everything you wanted?
He waved toward the crates.
We'll all be on board in a little while.
One of the boxes seemed to be pretty heavy. Frank watched two men pick it up and lug it up the gangplank.
Rifles, pistols, and ammunition. Just like you said.
Much obliged. I'm sure the ladies will appreciate it, too.
The man looked around.
Are they here yet?
Frank suppressed the urge to grin. The storekeeper hoped to catch a glimpse of those mail-order brides he'd heard about. That was another reason he had come along with the wagons.
I think they're still at the hotel. They'll be along directly.
Oh.
The storekeeper tried not to look or sound too disappointed. All the supplies had been unloaded now, so he no longer had an excuse for hanging around the dock.
Well, I wish you good luck then, Mr. Morgan.
Frank leaned over in the saddle and reached out to shake hands with the man, who was sitting on one of the wagon seats.
Thanks. I'm hoping we won't need luck. But I'll bet a hat that we will before we get where we're going.
The wagons rattled off a minute later. Frank swung down from the saddle and tied the horse's reins to one of the pilings that stuck up at the edge of the dock. Then he went up the gangplank with Wolf following him. Captain Hoffman himself was at the head of the gangplank today. He looked past Frank.
My God! I thought you said you were bringing a dog with you, Mr. Morgan, not a wolf.
Don't worry about him. He's all dog. Well, mostly, anyway. I can't be sure about all his ancestors, though.
Frank gestured toward Stormy and Goldie.
They're my horses.
I suppose we can rig some sort of sling and boom to lift them onto the deck and lower them into the hold.
No need. I'll just lead them aboard, if that's all right with you.
Up the gangplank?
They're pretty sure-footed. I've trusted my life to them on ledges that are even narrower than a plank, with a sheer cliff going up on one side and a drop of several hundred feet on the other.
I don't see how anyone does such a thing. Give me the sea any day.
Frank looked out at the cold, gray waters of the Sound, which were pretty choppy this morning, and felt the same way about it that Hoffman did about those high mountain trails.
The weather's taken a turn for the worse.
This?
Hoffman made a casual gesture toward the leaden sky.
This is nothing to worry about. I'd be more concerned if it was clear and warm. Now, if you're sure about bringing those horses of yours aboard, we can lower some boards through the hatch into the cargo hold to make a ramp.
I'll go get them.
One at a time, he led Stormy and Goldie up the gangplank onto the deck, and then down the makeshift ramp into the hold. As he expected, neither of them had any trouble. They were both almost as nimble as mountain goats. The sailors had put up some partitions to form stalls in one corner of the hold, and buckets of fresh water and grain were already in place. Hoffman had done a good job of preparing for the unexpected four-legged passengers, and Frank intended to thank him and compliment him for his efforts. He left Wolf below decks as well, telling the big cur to stay with Stormy and Goldie. Wolf didn't seem to like it much, but he would do whatever Frank told him. When Frank started topside again, he heard women's voices before he even emerged from the hold. As he came out on deck, he saw that Fiona and the young women had arrived at the wharf in several carriages, followed by a wagon piled high with baggage. Captain Hoffman stood at the railing, a frown on his face. He glanced at Frank.
I hope we have room for all those bags. Women don't travel lightly, do they, Mr. Morgan?
Well, don't ask me a question like that when there are ladies in earshot, Captain.
Fiona had reached the top of the gangplank.
Good morning, Frank. Captain Hoffman, do we have your permission to come aboard?
Indeed, you and your charges do, Mrs. Devereaux, ma'am. Welcome to the Montclair, all of you.
The young women came up the gangplank and onto the ship. Hoffman had one of his officers show them to their cabins. It wasn't Brewster who got the job, Frank noted. In fact, Frank hadn't even seen Brewster this morning. He wondered if Captain Hoffman had assigned him to duties below decks to keep him out of the way. If so, that was fine for now. But Frank doubted if Hoffman would be able to keep the two of them apart all the way to Skagway. The drizzle turned to a hard rain, driving everyone inside, except the sailors who had to be on deck. Frank lingered for a moment with moisture dripping off the brim of his hat.
We're putting ourselves in your hands, Captain.
Don't worry.
Hoffman buttoned up the slicker he had put on.
In less than a week, you'll be in Skagway. And once you've seen that hellhole, you may wish you were back on my boat, Mr. Morgan.
The captain's prediction stayed with Frank as the ship weighed anchor a short time later and used its steam engine to push itself away from the dock, out into Elliott Bay, and then Puget Sound itself. Just how much of a hellhole was Skagway? Frank had seen many boom towns in his time, most recently the silver mining town of Buckskin in Nevada. He had served as the marshal there for a while, and he had to admit that it had been an exciting, violent time. It was entirely possible that Skagway was worse, since it was more isolated. Frank didn't know if there was any law up there beyond what the settlers themselves made. He wondered if Whitehorse would be better or worse. At least across the border in Canada, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police had jurisdiction. Frank had run into a few Mounties in the past and knew them to be tough, capable hombres. But he was getting ahead of himself. They still had several days' worth of sailing to go before they arrived in Alaska. He went to the tiny porthole of the cabin he had been assigned and looked out at the rain-lashed waters of the Sound. He felt the faint vibration of the deck under his feet from the engines and heard their deep-throated rumble. That was reassuring. The engines were powerful enough so that they sent the vessel through the water at a steady pace. The ship pitched some, enough to make Frank a little queasy, in fact, but he thought he would get used to it without much trouble. He hoped so, anyway. But even if he did, he would still be mighty glad to have dry land under his feet again. He remembered looking at one of the maps in Captain Hoffman's cabin. From Puget Sound, the ship turned west and headed through the Strait of Juan de Fuca, which led to the Pacific Ocean. Frank had seen the Pacific on numerous occasions, most recently during a dust-up in the Redwood Country of Northern California, but it was always an impressive sight, stretching out endlessly to the horizon. Frank looked out at the mountains that wore a gray shroud of clouds and rain and knew that he was bidding farewell to land for a few days. A knock on his door took him a little by surprise. He turned away from the porthole and went to answer the summons. When he swung the door open, he found Fiona standing there. She had shed her coat and hat and wore an elegant traveling gown of some dark gray fabric that clung to her body.
Well, we're on our way, Frank.
Yeah, I know. I was just watching the shoreline fall behind us.
She lifted a bottle that had been partially concealed behind the folds of her dress.
I thought we might have a drink to commemorate our departure and the start of our new venture.
It's your venture, not mine. I'm just a hired hand.
I was hoping that wouldn't be the case. I could use a partner, Frank. I was considering making that offer to Mr. Trench once I got to know him better. But since he's gone, I'm making it to you.
Me? In the mail-order bride business?
Frank managed not to laugh at such a loco notion.
I don't think that'd be a very good idea. I don't have much of a head for business.
That was why he had firms of high-priced lawyers in San Francisco and Denver looking out for his interests, he thought. But he didn't say that to Fiona.
Don't worry about that. I'll handle all the business end of the operation. What I need is a man to make the details run smoothly. And I must say, I've been very impressed with the way you've handled everything. I'm sure that if we run into trouble, you'll handle that, too.
That's what I figure. But you don't need a partner for things like that, Fiona. You just need somebody to work for you, like Jacob was going to. Like I am.
A man does a better job if he has a personal stake in something.
Fiona moved closer to him and shut the cabin door behind her.
That's why I thought we could have a drink and talk about extending your involvement.
He was slow as molasses sometimes, Frank thought, as he suddenly realized why she had really come to his cabin.
I'm still not sure that would be a good idea.
She was right in front of him now, only inches away. She laid her free hand on his chest.
I think it would be an excellent idea.
Frank was as human as the next hombre. And Fiona Devereaux was a beautiful woman with what appeared to be an excellent bottle of whiskey in her hand. He slid his left arm around her waist and pulled her closer.
Sailors have a saying.
Fiona tipped her head back to look up into his eyes.
Somewhere in the world, the sun is over the yardarm.
I reckon I'll drink to that. Later.
Despite the rough seas, the Montclair handled the waves easily that first day. Frank went up on deck when the rain stopped that afternoon and saw that Captain Hoffman had ordered the crew to raise the sails. They were full and billowing as the ship tacked back and forth, running before the wind. The engines still chugged along, but they didn't have to work as hard with the sails raised. Frank quickly discovered that being on deck where you could see the horizon rising and falling with each wave made his stomach feel worse. He was about to turn around and go below when Captain Hoffman hailed him from the bridge.
Mr. Morgan, how are you doing?
Frank raised a hand in a gesture that was more casual than he felt.
All right, I reckon. I'm just not that fond of the water.
You'll get used to it. We'll make an old salt out of you.
Frank doubted that. He didn't figure he'd be on board long enough to get too accustomed to the sea's motion. He was on his way back down to the below decks corridor when he encountered Fiona coming up. She wore a grim look on her face, and Frank thought he knew why. He heard sounds of retching coming from behind many of the closed cabin doors.
Nearly all of the girls are sick as dogs. I don't know what to do. I was on my way to ask the captain.
I don't think there's anything that can be done. You'll just have to let them get over it.
What if they don't?
Some will. The ones who don't will just have to be sick all the way to Alaska. It won't kill them, although they're liable to wish they could go ahead and die before it's over.
Did you know it would be like this?
I figured as much. But I knew there's no way around it. Shoot, I don't feel too good myself.
Fiona pressed a hand to her stomach.
Neither do I. In fact... Oh my God, Frank...
Oh, there's a bucket in your cabin. Or you can hurry on topside and maybe make it to the railing.
Oh, let's try that. Ugh. 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 I'm not sure it's worth it.
Well, you'll feel differently once we get to Skagway and start out for Whitehorse.
That may be even worse, just in different ways.
Frank couldn't argue with that, so he just shrugged again. Frank skipped the midday meal, but by nightfall his stomach had settled down enough so that he was hungry again. When he checked with Fiona and the rest of the women, none of them wanted to eat. He was planning to rustle something for himself from their supplies when he ran into one of the other passengers in the corridor outside the cabins. A man outfitted in the rough but new clothes of a gold hunter, a sure sign that he was making his first trip to Alaska.
You're Mr. Morgan, aren't you? I'm Peter Conway.
The youngster was trying to grow a beard, no doubt to make him look more like a sourdough, but he wasn't having much luck with it. The blonde whiskers were coming in sort of wispy-like. He was tall and broad-shouldered, though, and his grip was strong as Frank shook with him.
Yeah, I'm Morgan. Call me Frank, though.
All right. I'm pleased to meet you, Frank. Everyone's talking about you.
Everyone?
All the other prospectors, I mean. We heard about the things that happened in Seattle before the boat sailed, how you were in those gunfights and that brawl with one of the ship's officers. And of course, we've heard all about those women traveling with you. We've been waiting to get a look at them. They're still shut up in their cabins.
They're pretty sick. They may stay that way for the whole voyage.
Well, I hope not.
You know they're already spoken for, don't you?
Yeah, of course. They're mail order brides, right? We'd still enjoy talking to them. Where we're going, we may not see any respectable women for a long time.
That's true enough, I reckon. Some of them might not mind socializing a little on the way, but that's up to them. It's my job to keep them from being bothered.
I understand. And I'll pass the word along. Better yet, why don't you come have supper with us? That is, if you don't mind eating dinner with a bunch of chichacos.
What's that?
Oh, that's what they call us newcomers up there in the Klondike. Or so I've heard. It's some sort of Indian word.
Like a tenderfoot, or a greenhorn back where I come from in Texas.
Yeah, I suppose. Anyway, we have plenty of food if you'd like to join us.
Sure, I'm much obliged.
Frank would be glad for the company, and he didn't think it would hurt anything to get to know some of his fellow passengers. He followed Conway up on deck. The wind was cold, but the rain had stopped, and a group of gold hunters had gathered around a Primus stove where they were cooking a pot of stew. Conway introduced Frank to the men.
You're the gunfighter they call the Drifter, aren't you?
That's right.
I've read books about you, mister. Never thought I'd meet you, though.
Oh, those books are mostly made up, and the hombres who write them have pretty wild imaginations.
Frank took a cup of the stew that Peter Conway handed to him. It smelled delicious. It tasted as good as it smelled, he discovered as he began to eat. Earlier in the day, he had thought that he wouldn't have an appetite again until the ship docked and he had dry land under his feet. He was surprised now by how hungry he was. He'd always had an iron constitution, though, and he supposed that included his stomach. The dime novel reader sidled over to him again.
Well, how many men you kill, Mr. Morgan?
I don't carve notches in my gun, bud, if that's what you're asking.
There are so many you don't even know anymore, do you?
I never killed anybody who wasn't trying to kill me or somebody else. I don't see any point in keeping count of how many fools there are in the world. That'd be a never-ending job.
I just can't imagine what it would be like to shoot all those men to have that much blood on your hands. How do you sleep at night?
Frank didn't answer the question.
Where are you from, mister?
New York City. Why?
I figured as much.
What the hell do you mean by that?
Conway came up in time to hear that last exchange.
Take it easy, Neville. I asked Mr. Morgan to join us. I don't want you getting in an argument with him.
Well, I'm not arguing with anybody, but he insulted New York.
No, I didn't. I reckon it's a fine place, but it's been settled for a long time. It hasn't been a real frontier for, what, a couple of hundred years? So you folks back there have forgotten what it's like to have to fight to defend yourself and your loved ones. You've never known any real danger.
If you'd ever been to certain parts of New York City, you wouldn't say that, Morgan.
Well, you might be right. All I'm saying is that you look at things different than folks who grow up out west do. We're used to relying on ourselves. And if you're going to Alaska to hunt for gold, well, that'd be a good thing for you to learn too, amigo.
I suppose you're right. I didn't mean any offense, Morgan. How pretty are those girls you're taking up to the Klondike?
The other would-be prospectors crowded around to hear Frank's answer.
Well, they're nice-looking young ladies. And they're ladies. Don't forget that. They're all engaged to be married.
To men they've never met. It might as well be us.
But it's not. Like I told you, Pete, they're spoken for. And that's the way it is.
Well, maybe they wouldn't mind dancing with us or just talking to us for a little.
I can ask them, but it's up to them.
Or more likely, it was up to Fiona, he thought. She was in charge of this expedition. He would go along with whatever she said and enforce her wishes, within reason, of course. He polished off the stew and had a cup of coffee with the Chichacos as well. Then he told them goodnight and started back toward the door that led below decks. He went around one of the low square structures that housed a hatch opening into the cargo hold. As he strode past the corner of it, he suddenly heard the scuff of shoe leather on the deck behind him. Instinct made him pivot sharply toward the sound, but whoever was behind him struck with deadly swiftness. Something hard crashed against Frank's head with stunning impact. The blow drove him to his knees. He struggled to get up, but his attacker grabbed him from behind, looping an arm around his neck and tightening it like an iron bar. Frank's breath was cut off. His head was already spinning from the hard cloud in his skull, and now a red haze began to settle over his vision, brought on by the lack of air. He realized that he was about to pass out. His attacker intended to shove him over the rail into the icy waters of the Pacific. Frank managed to thrust a booted foot behind him, between the legs of the man who had hold of him. Their ankles tangled up.
You son of a bitch!
The man tripped and fell forward, taking Frank with him. They crashed to the deck about 5 feet short of the railing. He lashed out with a foot. The kick connected with his assailant and drove the man away from him. Frank got his hands on the deck and pushed himself up. This area of the ship was fairly dark. A light burned on the bridge, but the glow from it barely reached this far. Frank's attacker was only a shadowy shape as he got to his feet and rushed again. Frank recognized that move, though. Brewster had tried it on him the day before. Frank knew it was a feint. He went the other way, the way he knew Brewster was going to dodge at the last second, and threw a punch. Brewster ran right into Frank's fist. The blow knocked him back, but Brewster managed to stay on his feet. He bore in, swinging wild punches. Frank was able to block most of them, but a few thudded against his body. Brewster forced him back a step, then another, and another, until Frank reached the railing. He felt it pressing into his back. Brewster suddenly changed tactics. His hand shot out, locked around Frank's throat. He heaved up, and Frank felt his feet come off the deck. In another second, Brewster was going to force him over the railing. In desperation, Frank lifted his knee into the officer's groin. Brewster didn't loosen his grip.
Hey! Let him go!
Frank recognized Pete Conway's voice. The brawny young Chichaco grabbed Brewster's shoulder and jerked him away from Frank, turning him so that he could drive a fist into Brewster's face. The terrific blow sent Brewster spinning away across the deck. Frank slumped as Brewster let go of him. He caught hold of the railing and pushed himself upward. Brewster recovered and charged at Conway, slugging ferociously. The young Chichaco was big and strong, but he wasn't an experienced brawler the way Brewster was. Brewster landed several punches that drove Conway to the deck, half stunned. Then Brewster lifted a brutal kick into Conway's belly that sent the young man rolling. Someone must have seen the struggle and reported it, because Frank heard running footsteps coming closer.
Brewster! Relay that! Stop it, you damn fool!
Brewster ignored the command.
Yeah!
He charged Frank again. Frank dived to the deck, going low into Brewster's legs. Brewster's momentum carried him on, and he pitched forward. Frank rolled and came up on hands and knees, looking around for his opponent. The man was nowhere to be seen. A shock went through Frank as he realized what had happened. Brewster had fallen forward out of control and went right over the railing. Frank hadn't heard the splash, but he knew that Brewster must have gone into the water.
Man overboard! Man overboard! All engines stop! All stop!
The Montclair slowed as whoever was on duty on the bridge relayed the command to the engine room, but the ship didn't come to a stop. The sails were still raised and full of air.
Strike the sheets! Strike all sheets!
Hoffman leaned over the rail and searched the black water.
Brewster! Can you hear me? Brewster!
Frank and Conway climbed to their feet and stumbled over to join the captain. Frank peered over the railing, but couldn't see anything out there except darkness. He listened, but heard nothing except the slapping of the waves. Sailors came running with life preservers tied to thick ropes. They threw them out into the area in which Brewster had disappeared. The ship finally shuddered to a dead stop in the water as the sails were lowered. With the engine stopped, there was an eerie quiet on board.
Brewster! Brewster! Brewster!
No response came back from the sea. Some of the officers brought bullseye lanterns to the rail and swept the beams from them over the waves.
Brewster!
The searching and shouting went on for a good half hour before Captain Hoffman turned away from the rail, wearily shaking his head. He motioned to the other men to step back as well.
It's been too long. Brewster was a good swimmer, but no man could stay afloat for this long in water that cold. He might have been knocked out when he struck the surface. He must have gone down quickly.
I didn't mean for him to go overboard.
I know that. He wouldn't have if he had obeyed my order and stopped fighting. His pride just wouldn't allow him to admit defeat, either this time or the time he clashed with you before, Morgan.
Hoffman looked at Frank.
You may not believe this. That quality was one of the things that made him an exceptional sailor. He never quit.
I reckon I can understand that. A man needs to stick to what he starts. Most of the time, anyway.
Are you all right? Were you injured?
He hit me a pretty good wallop with something when he first jumped me.
Frank felt his head and found a sore, swollen lump.
Oh, there's a goose egg up there. Oh, but this old skull of mine is too hard to dent very easily. I'll be fine.
Hoffman turned to Conway.
What about you, young man?
Oh, I'm fine. The fella got in some good licks, but that's all.
Did you see what happened?
I sure did. That man jumped Mr. Morgan and tried to force him over the rail.
He likely would have, too, if you hadn't pitched in when you did, Pete.
When I saw what was going on, I just tried to help.
You probably saved my life. I won't forget that.
Frank turned back to Hoffman.
I'm sorry for the loss of your officer, Captain. But this wasn't my fault or young Conway's.
No. As I said, it was Brewster's pride that caused his death. An unfortunate tragedy. But no one else is to blame.
I wouldn't want anybody trying to get back at me by hurting Mrs. Devereaux or the young ladies. Any members of the crew who have a problem with me need to take it up with me.
There won't be any of that. You don't have to worry. I'll make it clear that there are to be no repercussions. I doubt if there would have been anyway. Brewster was admired for his qualities of seamanship. He wasn't well-liked.
The captain turned to his first mate.
Go up to the bridge and tell the engine room to get some steam up again. The wind's dying for the night, so we won't raise the sails.
Aye, Captain. A head full on the same bearing once we have steam?
Aye.
Hoffman cast one final look at the stretch of dark water where Brewster disappeared.
We'll be heading north again.
The rest of the group of Chechakos had come up while the search for Brewster was going on. As the crewmen scattered to go about their tasks, the novice gold hunters gathered around Frank and Conway. Neville, the New Yorker, led the troop.
Guess this is what you meant about a life and death struggle, Morgan. That trouble came at you without any warning, and you had to deal with it. Same thing's liable to happen to any of us in Alaska.
Not exactly the same thing. Nobody's gonna throw us off a ship up there.
There are plenty of other things that can kill a man.
The gold hunters talked about the fight and Brewster's death for a while longer. Frank managed to get away from them. He motioned for Conway to follow him as he started once again toward the door leading below decks.
I'm obliged for your help, Pete. I reckon you really did save my life.
I'm glad I could lend a hand, Mr. Morgan.
Make it, Frank.
All right, I'm glad I could help, Frank. I didn't really think about it, I just saw that you were in trouble.
Conway hesitated, then went on.
But if you really want to thank me, maybe you could talk one of those ladies into having a dance with me before they all go off to White Horse and get married.
I'll see what I can do.
An air of gloom hung over the ship the next morning. Brewster might not have been well liked, but his loss still affected most of the passengers and crew on board. People couldn't help but think how easily the sea could claim them, too, if they were unlucky enough to fall overboard. Fiona was getting her sea legs, and since she felt better, she spent part of the time fussing over Frank.
That man could have killed you. I intend to speak to Captain Hoffman about this.
No need for that. It wasn't his fault.
In a way, it was. He should have had better control over his crew.
Frank couldn't argue with that. Although he wasn't sure anybody could have controlled a stiff-necked son of a bitch like Brewster. He managed to talk Fiona out of filing an official complaint with the shipping line that owned the Montclair. He didn't see how that would do any good. Fiona wasn't too receptive to the idea of the young women spending some time with Pete Conway and the other novice gold hunters.
How do we know we can trust them?
Well, Pete saved my life. I owe him a favor.
And since you're working for me, I suppose by extension, I do too. If I still can't talk you into becoming my partner, that is.
I don't figure that'd be a good idea. Once we get these gals to where they're going, I'll have kept my promise to Jacob.
What about making sure I get back safely to Seattle next spring?
Frank thought about it and nodded.
I reckon I could do that.
Good. That gives me all winter in Skagway to change your mind about... How do you Westerners say it? Throwing in with me? I can be quite persuasive, you know.
Frank didn't doubt that for a second.
And as far as having some sort of little get-together with those prospectors, I suppose it wouldn't hurt anything.
Good. I'll tell P.
But I'm holding you responsible for their good behavior. If they get out of line, I'm counting on you to put a stop to it.
A short time later, Frank told Peter about Fiona's decision.
One of the fellows plays the fiddle. We'll just have a regular dance right here on the deck of the ship.
Just make sure they all understand that they can't try anything improper.
Just some dancing and conversation, that's all. That'll give us some good memories to hang on to when the temperature is 40 below, the snow is 10 feet deep outside, and there's a bear trying to get into the cabin to eat us.
When you put it like that, it almost makes me want to go out and hunt for gold, too.
The dance was scheduled for that night. Fiona gathered the young women and spoke to them about it. Most of them were feeling better now as they became more accustomed to the motion of the ship, and all of them agreed that they could go along with the plan, even Gertrude.
Those prospectors had better keep their hands to themselves, though. I'm a respectable woman, even if I am a mail-order bride.
Mr. Morgan assures me that they'll be on their best behavior.
Fiona looked at Frank.
Isn't that right?
Yes, ma'am. If they give any of you any trouble, just let me know.
Word got around the ship about the gathering. Frank overheard some discussion of it among the crew, and he wondered if some of the sailors planned to show up and ask the women to dance with them, too. That could lead to problems. The gold hunters might feel that the sailors were horning in and take offense to it. He didn't think it would be anything he couldn't handle, though, so he didn't mention it to Captain Hoffman. The captain must have heard about it on his own, because he sought out Frank late that afternoon.
I hear there's going to be some sort of soiree on deck tonight involving those young women of yours.
Well, they're not exactly my young women. There's just going to be a little dancing and some conversation with Pete Conway and the rest of those gold hunters.
My crew has heard about it, and some of them resent the fact that they weren't included in the arrangements. They'd like to know if they can dance with the young ladies as well.
Oh, it doesn't matter to me. That's up to the young ladies. I promised Mrs. Devereaux there wouldn't be any trouble, though.
Perhaps it would be best if I spoke to my officers and had them pass the word to the men that they should avoid the activities. That way there'll be no chance of anything going wrong.
Do whatever you think you should, Captain.
It was possible that the whole thing would have to be canceled. The sky was still overcast, and there were occasional squalls of cold rain and sleet. The Montclair had no ballroom or salon. It was a working ship, transporting people and cargo, and it didn't make pleasure cruises or cater to wealthy passengers. But just before sunset, the clouds thinned, and the chilly wind began to die down. It looked like the weather was going to cooperate, at least as much as it could at this time of year and at this latitude. Soon after dinner, Frank led Fiona and the young women up on deck. Lanterns had been placed on the hatch covers, and while the setting wasn't exactly what anyone would call festive, it had a certain air of celebration about it. Conway, Neville, and the rest of the Chechakos were waiting with smiles of anticipation on their faces. They had scrubbed their faces as well. Some of them had shaved, and a few had even put on suits. Conway was one of them. As the young women looked over the group of men, Jessica Harp turned to Meg Goodwin.
Look at that big, blonde one. Isn't he handsome?
Don't get too attached to any of these men, ladies. Remember, you have husbands-to-be waiting for you in the Klondike.
Conway stepped forward and gave an awkward little bow.
Mrs. Devereaux, ma'am. Ladies, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you for the invitation, Mr. Conway. May I present Miss Goodwin, Miss Harp, Miss Donnelly, Miss Beaulieu?
Fiona went down the line, introducing all the women. Conway, who seemed to have taken on the leadership of the Chechakos despite his youth, responded by introducing all of the men, starting with himself and Neville. Frank stood off to the side, smiling to himself at the stiffness of it. One good thing about getting older, he had long since passed the point where he felt uncomfortable around women. He knew better than to think that they could no longer hold any surprises for him, but at least all those courtship rituals didn't mean much to him anymore.
Charlie here plays the fiddle.
Conway gestured toward one of the older prospectors.
He's going to provide some music if you ladies would care to dance.
Are you asking?
Well, I reckon I am. Would you care to dance with me, ma'am?
She held out a hand to him.
I'd love to. Thank you.
The fiddler grinned and took out his bow. He lifted the instrument to his shoulder, tucked his chin over it, and began to saw on the strings. Conway took Jessica into his arms, being careful to leave some space between their bodies, and they launched into a rough waltz. The rest of the women paired up with the Chichacos and began to dance as well. There were more men than women, so some of the gold hunters had to wait their turn. Fiona sidled over to Frank.
What about you?
What about me?
Are you much of a dancer, Frank?
Well, not really. I can manage not to step on a gal's feet if I try hard enough, but that's about it.
Fiona took his hand.
I don't believe you. I've seen how you move. You have a natural, fluid grace about you.
Maybe when I'm drawing a gun.
Nonsense. Come on. We can't let these young people have all the fun.
She wasn't all that much older than the other women, Frank thought, but he supposed that being a widow, she felt more mature. He went along with what she wanted, taking her in his arms and twirling her around the open area of the deck that served as a dance floor. The young women switched back and forth among the Chichacos so that all the men got a chance to swing them around the deck. Sometimes one of the gold hunters would get impatient and cut in on another while a dance was going on. Frank thought a time or two that this might cause a ruckus, but the men seemed to know that if a fight broke out, the impromptu social would be over. They restrained any irritation they felt. When the fiddler finally had to take a break and rest a little, the men and women stood around talking. The Chichacos seemed to enjoy that almost as much as the dancing. After a while, the fiddler was ready to go again, and as he lifted the fiddle and bow, the men claimed their partners. Frank turned toward the fiddler to find out why he had stopped, and saw more than a dozen members of the ship's crew striding along the deck toward them. The sailors had an air of grim determination about them.
Oh, no. I was afraid this might happen.
I was worried about it, too. Captain Hoffman had a talk with me and promised he'd keep his boys in line, but I reckon they didn't really listen.
He wasn't all that surprised. Having women around usually made it hard for lonesome hombres to concentrate on anything else. Frank stepped forward, getting between the sailors and the Chichacos. He lifted a hand.
Hold it right there, fellas. This is a private get-together.
Why should it be? We got rights too, you know.
Yeah, and you can't toss us all overboard, mister.
Frank's jaw tightened. No one was really mourning Brewster's death, but they hadn't forgotten about it either.
Captain Hoffman gave you orders to steer clear. If you're off duty, I reckon you'd better go back to your quarters. If you're supposed to be on watch, you're neglecting your jobs.
Just one dance. That's all we're asking.
He grinned at the young women.
How about it, ladies? Wouldn't you rather dance with some real men instead of these gold-crazy landlubbers?
Neville stepped forward, clenching his fists and bristling with anger.
You can't talk about us like that. At least we've got some ambition. We won't spend the rest of our lives swabbing some deck.
There's no need for trouble here. You sailors go on about your business.
To hell with that. I want to dance.
He rushed forward, obviously intending to grab the nearest young woman. That was Jessica Harp. Frank would have intercepted the sailor, but he didn't get the chance. Pete Conway sprang in front of Jessica. He met the sailor with a hard punch that knocked him off his feet and sent him skidding across the deck on his butt. The other sailors surged forward, ready to fight. The Chichacos did likewise, pushing the young women aside. Dancing and socializing were forgotten. The men on both sides were ready to brawl instead.
Frank, you said you wouldn't let this happen.
I'm not.
Frank palmed out his Colt and pointed it at the night sky. The pair of shots made everyone on deck freeze in their tracks. The reports were loud, even out here on the vast open sea.
Everybody hold it! The next man who throws a punch will answer to me!
He didn't actually say he would shoot the next man who tried to hit somebody, but the sailors and the gold hunters all seemed to take it that way, which was exactly what Frank intended. He knew they were all aware of his reputation as a gunman, so he figured he might as well take advantage of the fact. One of the sailors pointed at the Chichacos.
They started it!
The hell we did! Now, Pete was just protecting Miss Hobb from you lugs!
I can take care of myself. Thank you.
But when Jessica turned to look at Conway, a smile appeared on her face.
But you really were gallant, Mr. Conway.
That made the big youngster grin from ear to ear. Captain Hoffman came stalking up from below decks, followed by the first mate. The sailors started to scatter before Hoffman reached them.
Get to your posts! Right now, by God!
Hoffman came to a stop in front of Frank and glared at him.
I assume you fired those shots, Mr. Morgan?
I figured that was better than letting these fellas beat each other half to death.
Frank opened the revolver cylinder. He reached under his sheepskin coat and took a couple of shells from the loops on his belt to replace the ones he had fired.
You said there wouldn't be any trouble.
I said I'd handle it if there was.
Frank finished reloading and snapped the cylinder closed.
It's handled. You don't see men fighting all over the deck, do you?
The group of sailors had dispersed, even the man Pete Conway had knocked down. The young women and the gold hunters were standing separately, with the fiddler in the middle looking a little forlorn as he held his fiddle and bow at his sides. From the looks of things, his services wouldn't be needed any more tonight.
I think all the passengers should return to their accommodations now.
So do I.
Fiona's eyes glittered with anger as she looked at Frank. He wasn't sure why everybody was blaming him. He had warned them of the possible consequences.
After all, it was their decision to go along with the idea.
Fiona started herding the brides below to their cabins. Muttering with disappointment, the Chichacos withdrew to the other end of the deck. Some of them had cabins, but many of them had paid only for deck space, so they were spending the voyage outdoors, under tarps they used as makeshift tents.
Mr. Morgan, we'll reach Skagway in 2 more days. I hope you can keep a lid on this trouble until then.
I intend to. But again, it was your men who disobeyed orders and bowled in where they weren't supposed to be.
The captain turned away, refusing to acknowledge that his crewmen were the ones who had caused the trouble. Conway came up.
I'm sorry, Frank. I suppose I shouldn't have punched that fella. I just couldn't stand by and let him grab Miss Harp like that, though.
He didn't actually grab her. You didn't give him the chance.
Yes, but he was going to. You could tell that.
The young man was right. And if Conway hadn't walloped the sailor, Frank thought, he probably would have. That really would have set off a fracas.
Do you think we'll get a chance to spend any more time with the ladies before we get to Skagway?
Frank clapped a hand on his shoulder.
I don't know, son. Probably not if Mrs. Devereaux has anything to say about it, and she's in charge of them. But you got those good memories you're talking about. The ones you can hang on to when you're wondering why the hell you came to Alaska in the first place.
I suppose so. I just hope that's enough.
Frank did too. But mostly, he hoped that the rest of the voyage to Skagway would pass peacefully. He should have known better. Even before he climbed out of his bunk the next morning, Frank knew something was wrong. The ship was pitching around more than it had been earlier in the voyage, and he could hear the wind howling. He got up, swallowing the queasiness that tried to take hold in his stomach, and pulled on his clothes, including the sheepskin coat. Then he headed for the deck to look for Captain Hoffman and find out what was going on.
Son of a bitch!
His boots slipped as soon as he stepped outside, and he had to grab hold of the side of the door to keep from falling. A thin, almost invisible layer of ice coated the deck. More sleet pelted down as Frank started cautiously across the deck toward the stairs leading up to the bridge. He went up them carefully, and when he reached the top, he saw Hoffman at the wheel, huddled there in a slicker and rain hat.
Captain!
Hoffman looked back over his shoulder in surprise.
Mr. Morgan, you better get back to your cabin. This isn't fit weather for you to be out.
Doesn't look like it's fit weather to be sailing in.
Don't worry about the Montclair. She can handle a little blow like this.
If Hoffman thought this was a little blow, Frank would have hated to see what the captain considered a major storm. The wind lashed viciously at the ship, and the angry waves seemed to be trying to toss it straight up into the sky. The sails were lowered, so the Montclair was running on its engines alone. Frank thought the wind would probably rip the sails to shreds if they were raised. He leaned closer to Hoffman.
We're not far from the coastline, are we? Maybe you should just make a run for shore so we can ride out the storm there.
And risk being battered to pieces on some rocks?
Hoffman shook his head.
I know what I'm doing, Morgan. We'll be all right. This squall will blow itself out before the day's over.
Frank didn't believe that. It looked to him like the first of the winter storms had arrived a few weeks earlier than Hoffman expected. But he had to admit that he was no sailor, and certainly no expert where the sea was concerned. Hoffman had made this Seattle to Skagway run before. He ought to know what he was doing.
All right. But if there's anything I can do to help...
Just go below, dry off, and don't worry. We'll be fine.
As the day went on, though, It began to look like they would be anything but fine. The storm continued unabated. If anything, its ferocity seemed to grow stronger. Fiona and all the young women were sick again, as were some of the Chichakos. The ones who had purchased deck space were allowed below decks to huddle miserably in the corridors because they would have frozen to death and wound up ice-covered corpses if they had remained topside. Frank weathered the storm better than most of the landlubbers. His stomach was a little unsettled, but he never completely lost his appetite. He wound up taking his meals in the officers' mess at Captain Hoffman's invitation. The officers expressed confidence in the captain and in the Montclair's ability to handle this rough weather, but Frank thought he saw worry lurking in their eyes. It was the same sort of concern he had seen more than 20 years earlier at Fort Lincoln, in the eyes of some of the junior officers of the 7th Cavalry as they were about to follow Colonel George Armstrong Custer into Indian country. Frank had been passing through, headed in the opposite direction, and he remembered thinking that he wouldn't have gone with those soldier boys for all the money in the world. Now he had no choice but to put his trust in Captain Rudolph Hoffman. Hoffman was the only man who could get them where they were going. The seas were still extremely rough that evening, but the wind had died down slightly. Sleet showers still lashed the vessel and added to the layer of ice that had formed on the deck. Frank slept only fitfully, and during the night he heard groans coming from some of the other cabins. The women were suffering a lot more than he was, but there was nothing he could do for them. The next morning, he sought out Hoffman again and found the captain in his cabin poring over the charts.
You think we'll reach Skagway today?
Frank knew from looking at the maps that they would have to sail through Glacier Bay and then up a long inlet to reach the port city. He hoped that once they made it to the bay, the water would be calmer.
I don't know.
Frank didn't like what he heard in the captain's voice. The confidence and decisiveness that had been there earlier were gone now.
I've never seen a gale quite this bad. So early, I mean.
Frank had a feeling Hoffman meant he had never encountered a storm this bad before, period. That wasn't good.
You do know where we are, don't you?
Hoffman got to his feet and glared angrily at Frank.
Of course I know where we are. Taking readings has been difficult because of the weather, but I've sailed these waters more than a dozen times. We'll be fine, Mr. Morgan, and the best thing you can do is go back to your cabin and wait. If there's anything you need to know, I'll make sure you do.
All right. I don't mean any offense, Captain, but I promised an old friend that I'd get Mrs. Devereaux and those young ladies safely to their destination. I intend to do that.
So do I, Mr. Morgan. So do I.
Frank went back to his cabin and paused in front of the door to shake off some of the ice pellets that clung to his hat and coat before he went in. While he was standing there, the door to Fiona's cabin opened, her face haggard with strain.
We're not going to make it, are we, Frank?
I reckon we will. I just talked to the captain, and he said this is nothing to worry about.
Of course he says that. He's not going to admit that we never should have left Seattle this late in the season.
Frank refrained from pointing out to her that she had been just as determined to get to Skagway as Captain Hoffman was, if not more so. That wouldn't do any good. Fiona pawed hair out of her eyes.
We're all going to die, Frank. Frank, come in my cabin and hold me. I don't want to die alone.
None of us are going to die. And I'm covered with melting ice right now.
I don't care. I'm so scared. I can't be alone.
Ah! With a grinding racket, the ship gave a sudden lurch. The deck tilted for a second under Frank's feet, then settled back. That tilt was enough to throw Fiona into his arms.
Oh my God! We hit something! We're going to sink!
No, we're not!
Frank didn't know if that was true.
I'll go find the captain and see what happened.
By now, the doors of the other cabins were opening, and the brides started to pour out into the corridor. Fear had banished their sickness for the moment. Several of them cried out, demanding to know what was going on. Meg Goodwin was really the only one who didn't look like she was on the verge of hysteria.
Meg, get over here.
Frank practically thrust Fiona into her arms.
Take care of Mrs. Devereaux. I'll go find out what's going on.
We hit something. It's just a matter of how bad the damage is.
Frank figured she was right about that.
I'll be back as quick as I can.
He left the crowd of panicky women in the corridor and ran up the stairs to the deck. Something felt wrong, and as he emerged from the hatch, he could tell what it was. The ship had started to list a little to the right. Starboard, that was what the sailors called it, Frank told himself, then shoved that thought aside. The important thing was that the Montclair must have suffered some serious damage or it wouldn't be tilting like that. As he hurried toward the bridge, slipping a little on the ice that coated the deck, he saw that a frigid fog had closed in around the ship, but through those billows of white, he saw dark, hulking shapes sliding past. Ice-mantled pine trees thrust out from some of them. The ship was in the middle of a bunch of rocks and tiny islands, Frank realized. That meant they were a lot closer to shore than he had thought they were. He wondered if Hoffman had known just how close those rocks were. Frank had a hunch they had taken the captain by surprise. Unfortunately, the storm was as fierce as ever. The waves tossed the Montclair back and forth. Frank felt the deck shuddering under his feet as the engines strained mightily to keep up. He started to climb the steps to the bridge. Frank heard a dull boom somewhere from the bowels of the ship and felt an even stronger shudder go through the vessel.
Damn it.
Frank didn't know what the explosion meant, but it couldn't be anything good. A boiler bursting, maybe? He stumbled onto the bridge and saw Hoffman wrestling with the wheel.
Hard a port! Give me room to starboard! Ready the lifeboats!
Frank Morgan wasn't the sort of man who ever gave in to despair, but even his fighting heart sank a little at the sound of those words. Hoffman wouldn't order his men to prepare the lifeboats unless he planned to abandon the ship, and he wouldn't abandon the ship unless it was sinking. Frank glanced out at the storm-tossed waves and the jagged rocks sticking up through them like fangs. The thought of trusting his life and the lives of Fiona and the brides to a little boat in that maelstrom made a chill even icier than the wind go through him.
Captain! Captain, what can I do to help?
Hoffman spun toward him.
Morgan, get those women together and into a lifeboat! The ship's going down!
Do you have enough lifeboats for everybody?
Of course! They'll be crowded, but we can make it. I recognize these islands. We're not far from Glacier Bay. I miscalculated somehow.
Hoffman's pale face under the rain hat was stricken as he made that admission.
But the current will carry the boats into shore if they can stay off the rocks. You'll be all right. Take as many supplies as you can, and if you follow the shoreline, it'll take you to Skagway.
The idea of trekking 100 miles or more overland in weather like this wasn't very appealing, but it beat the hell out of drowning in the icy Pacific, Frank thought. He nodded and turned to hurry back below decks. Fiona and Meg were waiting for him, and to his surprise, so were Pete Conway, Neville, and a couple of other gold hunters. Fiona grabbed his arm.
What did the captain say?
Get some warm clothes on and grab everything else you can. We're abandoning ship.
So it is sinking. We hit a rock or something, didn't we?
That'd be my guess. The same thing goes for you and your friends, Pete. Grab as many supplies as you can and head for the lifeboats.
Conway looked scared, but he didn't waste time asking any more questions. He turned to the others.
Let's go, fellas.
The next few minutes were barely controlled chaos. Frank made sure that the women were gathering supplies and understood what they were supposed to do. Then he headed for the cargo hold where Stormy, Goldie, and Wolf were. The horses would have to swim for shore. They wouldn't fit in a lifeboat. He knew their chances of survival were slim, but he couldn't leave them here. If any animals had the strength, stamina, and gallant hearts to make it through this ordeal, it was Stormy and Goldie. The horses were frightened, but not panicked. Frank grinned and roughed up the thick fur around Wolf's neck.
Stay with me, boy. We'll find room for you in the lifeboat.
He looked around for the heavy planks that formed the ramp, intending to put them in a place so that Stormy and Goldie could get out of there. He had just found them when a couple of sailors dropped into the hold.
Captain Hoffman sent us to help you. He figured you'd want to get those horses of yours out of there.
Thanks. Let's get that ramp up. We'll need some of these supplies when we get to shore. Load as many of the crates as you can into the lifeboats.
The men got busy with that while Frank slipped harnesses on the two horses and led them up the ramp to the deck. It was slippery for them, too, and he worried they might fall and break a leg before they ever got off the ship. The women staggered up from below, their arms full of bundles. One of the ship's officers had them place the supplies in one lifeboat, then climb into another themselves.
Hang on, ladies! We're about to swing you over the side!
The boat swung out on its davits and then was lowered to the stormy sea. It bobbed and leaped, and they had to hang on for dear life. Frank bit back a curse as he watched. He wished he was in the same lifeboat, but it was too late to do anything about that. He'd been too busy loading supplies to stop. Pete Conway came up beside him, grunting with the effort of carrying a crate.
I don't know what's in here, Mr. Morgan, but I reckon we could probably use it.
Frank recognized the crate containing the rifles, pistols, and ammunition, and realized that Conway was carrying by himself what it had taken two sailors to load onto the ship. He took hold of it and helped Conway put it into one of the lifeboats. Captain Hoffman came along the deck.
All passengers in the lifeboats! All passengers off! Abandon ship! Abandon ship!
Hoffman paused and looked at Frank.
God, I'm sorry, Morgan. I don't know what happened.
Frank didn't say anything. He didn't know if Hoffman was truly to blame for this catastrophe or if it was purely a case of bad luck. Right now, he didn't care. Frank took hold of Conway's arm.
Climb in, Pete. I'll be right back.
He hurried over to his horses, grabbed their harnesses, and led them toward the edge of the deck where a section of railing had been swung out to let the lifeboats through.
You boys are gonna have to swim for it. I've never had a better pair of trail partners. I'll see you on shore.
Frank didn't know if the horses would jump off into the water or not. He didn't have a chance to find out.
Look out! The rocks!
The impact threw Frank off his feet. He landed on the icy deck and slid toward the edge. Twisting, he slapped at the deck to try to slow himself, but the ship kept tilting. Timbers groaned and snapped and bulkheads crumpled as the waves drove it against a giant rock. Frank had no chance to stop his slide. Like a rocket, he shot off the deck and plummeted toward the icy water below. It slammed against him like a frozen fist, and as he went under, its frigid grip closed around him and threatened to squeeze the very life out of him. Fighting against the panic that welled up inside him, Frank kicked hard in an effort to propel himself back to the surface. Something struck a heavy blow against his shoulder. He spun around and grabbed at it. His hand came out of the water. Someone grabbed it and hauled hard, lifting him. Frank's head broke the surface. His rescuer wrapped brawny arms around him and hauled him up into one of the lifeboats.
Gather around him! Get him out of the wind!
That was Pete Conway's voice bellowing orders. Obviously, the boat containing Conway and some of the supplies made it into the water. Frank felt bodies crowding around him, and it was a blessed relief as they cut the wind. He still felt like he was frozen through and through. The water sapped every bit of warmth out of his body. Frank couldn't see anything. His eyes seemed to be frozen shut. He lifted a hand and pawed clumsily at them, finally forcing them open. His sight returned in time for him to see the Montclair break up on the jagged rocks. Frank didn't know if anyone was left on board, but if they were, he didn't see how they could survive such devastation. It was one of the most terrible things he had ever seen.